to accept we'll never be together again. Then why do I hear hurt in your voice? She asks. I don't have a choice, Mom. I pause, and the silence lingers. I've read your pieces. She changes the subject, surprising me. They are very good. No matter how much Mom disapproved of my career choice, she never missed reading my articles. It was a conundrum I never understood. Why did you want me to be a doctor? I have never asked before, but now, given what I'm learning about my grandmother, the question feels imperative. Because your father is a doctor, she says, the answer seemingly enough. He's happy, successful. I wanted the same for you. It's such a simple answer. If I see it from her perspective, the first time I have tried to, then it is a mother wanting the best for her child. I love what I do, Mom, I say softly. It's what I'm meant to do. Then I am grateful. Mom, I think about my next words, choosing them carefully. No matter what the story tells me, please know that I love you. I always have. I hear her tears before she slowly tells me that she loves me too. Seconds later, I hear the dial tone. As I set down my own receiver, I start wondering if understanding her is the key to understanding myself. I sit for hours with those thoughts in my head. When the cafe starts to empty out and the barista announces closing time, I return to Ravi. Amisha, 28. Amisha rose early the day of the holy celebration. An ancient festival of color, it celebrated the arrival of spring. Around the country, fields were in bloom, and hope was alive for a productive harvest. The celebration brought out all castes and both genders as people celebrated with colors and merrymaking. Lord Krishna's followers honored him by imitating his playfulness. Legend had it that as a child, Krishna would mercilessly tease the gopis, the wives and daughters of cowherders. Amisha brushed her hair until it shone, though she knew it would be saturated soon enough with colored paint. She glanced at the small clock that Deepak had brought from the city. It was an extravagance, but he insisted they should have it.
It's getting late.
Amisha checked her reflection one last time in the small mirror that hung on the wall before rushing out of the room. They would first attend the public bonfire as a family and then join the community in the crowded streets to spray colored water and throw powder at one another.
Is everyone ready?
The villagers would watch as children climbed atop the open roofs designed for sleeping and spray colored powder on people below. The vibrant shades fell through the sky like a rainbow melting in the air. Everyone laughed as it saturated their hair and clothes. For Holi, all worries and most prejudices were set aside as everyone decorated one another with equal strokes.
Each of you looks perfect, as always.
Amisha gave her two eldest boys a tight hug before straightening their clothes. The boys slipped on their sandals by the front door. Both wore identical long ivory shirts over matching fitted pants.
My friends are already playing, Mama,
Jay pointed to the group waiting outside. In the meantime, Samir slipped out the front door with a quick wave.
I don't want to look perfect,
Jay, resisting her ministrations, began to twitch.
I want to play.
Then play. As he started to pull away, Amisha gently wrapped her arms around him.
But I can't have a good Holi if I don't get one more hug from my best middle son.
She brought his resistant body close, and when she tightened her arms around him, he relented and gave her a kiss on the shoulder.
Thank you.
She stood in the open doorway and watched with delight as the two boys joined their friends. Deepak exited the kitchen with a glass of buttermilk. Similar to Jay and Samir, he wore a long white tunic shirt over slim-fitting pants.
They are off.
Yes.
He had arrived last night on the train. Jay and Paresh had thrown themselves at him, while Samir shook his hand solemnly.
They're happy to have their father home on Holi.
For Amisha, her husband's absences continued to have little effect on her day-to-day life. With Ravi's and Bina's help, she easily ran the household and cared for the children. When Deepak was at home, he still spent most of the time at work or with the other men in the village. Their interactions remained limited in scope and rare.
I will follow them to the town.
Deepak set his glass down.
Vikram invited the lieutenant to celebrate the holiday with the villagers, he said,
clearly as an afterthought.
He told me last night.
Though Stephen had already told Amisha about the invitation days earlier at the school, she hadn't mentioned it. Amisha had tried early on, telling Deepak about her conversations with Stephen, but he had laughed them off, asking what a British officer and she could possibly have to talk about. Thereafter, she never spoke about their conversations in the garden or the hours they spent alone together. She didn't share with Deepak how conversations with Stephen came easily, or that even when they weren't talking, she thought about what she would say. Nor could she tell Deepak she was excited for Stephen to see the holy colors and learn their significance. She kept to herself how excited she was to see Stephen's eyes light up at the spectacle. She was confident he would enjoy the celebration as much as she did, and yearned to be near him as he experienced it. To celebrate the festival with a man who had come to be her friend in a manner she had never imagined. She wanted to show Stephen, at the end of the night, when there was no colored water left to be thrown and arms were weary, how everyone came together for a final meal. Brahmins laughed, while Jains and other upper castes passed out meals. For just one night, people were not divided based on social hierarchy. For Amisha, that was the most delightful sight of all. For that reason only, she convinced herself, she was excited to have Stephen attend. But with every want came the reminder that her feelings were not allowed. In her desire to spend time with the officer, she was violating every rule of her society and culture. Now, she stood on the doorstep and watched her husband follow their sons into town. In caring for Stephen, she was betraying Deepak and the vows she had made in front of God and her family. With her head hanging, she waited until the last minute to join the festivities. As the men talked, Amisha watched Stephen from her place among the women. Stephen patted a man on the back as he laughed at something he said. Even though he was standing among Deepak's group of friends, Amisha swore he kept a subtle distance, a distance she had never felt when they were together. Deepak's friends were highly educated in comparison to most of the villagers. Some had businesses within the village, while others were entrepreneurs, active with their own ventures. Success was the common thread that connected them. Within their community and the surrounding ones, they controlled the direction of the village because they had more money than others. Sir Vikram, driven by his personal chauffeur, joined them.
Lieutenant,
Vikram shook Stephen's hand in welcome.
It is gracious of you to join in our celebration.
I'm pleased to be here, Vikram, Stephen replied. I would have regretted missing out on such a joyous occasion.
The men continued their discussion of business and the state of the local economy. Amisha, overhearing them, realized they avoided any topic of the unrest
between the British and the natives. For that, she was grateful. Noticing Amisha watching the men, her friend Sujata followed her gaze. When she spotted Stephen, Sujata took in a sharp breath and then quickly glanced toward Amisha.
A member of the Raj here?
Yes. Amisha tore her gaze away to focus on Sujata. He's a lieutenant from the school. Though Amisha had never spoken about her time at the school, she knew in the small village it had become common knowledge.
He is here to celebrate Holi with us.
Sujata glared at Stephen.
He is not Indian. It is not his place to be here, she said, her scorn apparent. The soldiers need to return to where they came from.
England?
Amisha kept her voice light.
The scourge of the earth.
They are not the same. Amisha hid her dismay at Stephen's being called such a thing. She bit back her true thoughts and said instead,
Some of them are benevolent.
You spent time at the school, so now you like them. What, do you wish you were one of them?
Sujata raised her voice, catching the attention of the other women.
Our Amisha wishes she were British.
Amisha had to tread lightly. If she argued with them, they would continue to question her feelings. If she said nothing, they would rile her until she broke the silence. She glanced at Stephen as he spoke to Deepak.
I wish the soldiers gone as much as you do.
The lie came easily to her, and she hoped it sounded convincing. She faced forward, turning her back on the men.
But they are not. Maybe if we learn from them, we will be strong enough to fight them.
Is that what you're doing, Amisha?
Another friend, Tara, joined the conversation.
Learning so you can free us from the Raj?
Deepak Bahe has been gone too much,
Tara said, calling Deepak brother, as was conventionally done.
Amisha is losing her mind with her free time.
She wrapped an arm around Amisha's shoulders and pulled her in close for a quick hug. These women were some of Amisha's oldest friends from the village. Many of them had been married around the same time, and they had become close over the years. But no matter how much they shared, none of them seemed to understand Amisha's desire to write. Amisha laughed with them, relieved that the moment had passed.
I'm at the school so I don't have to spend my entire day with you ladies.
The women moved on to other topics while making their way toward the buffet tables. Every family brought entrees to share. The women began serving the food to the children. Holi often lasted 2 nights, but this first night was the height of the celebration. Amisha glanced toward Stephen, and his eyes caught hers. His gaze ran over the red and blue paint that covered her sari before drifting toward the yellow that streaked her hair. He took a step toward her before seeming to remember where he was. Regret filled her throat. Instead, he raised his hand slightly and waved. Amisha readied to return his greeting when she saw Deepak. She remembered her place, and regret overwhelmed her. Her face dropped, and she didn't return the greeting. When one of the ladies asked for help, Amisha quickly turned away. She began to uncover the rest of the dishes when she overheard Deepak say to Stephen,
My wife has been very happy at your school.
We are happy to have her, Stephen murmured. Amisha heard the strain in his voice and knew he was worried about her reaction.
She's an asset.
You're being charitable.
Deepak's laugh was quick and easy, as if the two were old friends instead of new acquaintances.
It is hard to imagine my wife, a teacher in a British school.
Dejected at Deepak's statement, Amisha strained to hear Stephen's response, but the clatter of dishes was too loud. Soon enough, the men joined them at the table for plates of food. Stephen stayed near the end, watching the interactions. Amisha took her place behind the table and began to fill the plates. Suddenly ashamed, she kept her focus on serving everyone. Stephen knew her to be the woman who demanded he teach her more after they finished their lessons. She was the woman who taught him to dance and threatened to push him off a bench when he teased her. The woman Stephen knew was not limited by boundaries, but instead soared free in the world she created as a storyteller. After everyone was served and the women began eating, Stephen approached her.
"Are you all right?"
he asked softly. He kept a safe distance between them to avoid attention.
"Yes," she murmured.
Her glance strayed toward Deepak, and his gaze followed hers. Expressing understanding, his eyes were filled with apology.
"I'm sorry. I shouldn't have intruded on your family event," he said. "I should go."
"I'm happy you are here," she admitted quickly. She paused before saying,
"It is just that I am not allowed to be."
Amisha imagined how he must see her now, subservient and anchored to the expectations of her world. Now, having seen her in her true light, he must be regretting the time wasted on teaching her. Her heart aching, she quickly filled a plate with a mix of nuts and raisins and a pudding of wheat, brown sugar, and butter.
"Prasad?"
she asked quietly. When Stephen hesitated, Amisha pushed the plate toward him.
"I made it, but it is still good."
As he reached for it, his fingers brushed against hers underneath the plate, entangling with them just for a moment. Her eyes met his, confused and unsure.
"I'm grateful to have come today,"
he said quietly, out of earshot of everyone else.
"Seeing you happy among your loved ones reminds me how lucky I am to have your friendship."
"As am I to have yours," Amisha breathed, grateful to him for giving their interactions a definition and boundaries. She sighed in relief and watched happily as he began to feast upon her prasad, clearing the plate of all the food. 29. Amisha was in her classroom when the door opened. She glanced up to see Nima standing in the doorway, her face covered by the edge of her sari. She wore a long-sleeved blouse, and the skirt beneath her sari reached the edge of her ankles.
"Nima!"
Amisha rushed toward her, stopping short of pulling the girl into an embrace.
"It's been months, Betty."
She squeezed Amisha's hand lightly.
"How are you?"
Nima grimaced before pulling her hand out of Amisha's.
"I'm fine."
Her voice, though strong, lacked the conviction it had when she was in class.
"My father told me you asked about me."
She turned away, keeping her features hidden.
"I begged him to allow me to come."
"Betty!" Amisha shut the classroom door quietly.
"What happened?"
Nima shook her head no, and all of Amisha's motherly instincts kicked in. She tenderly pulled the edge of Nima's sari away and bit back her shock. The entire right side of Nima's face was wrinkled and deep brown from burns. She cupped a shaking hand over Nima's cheek.
"It doesn't matter."
Nima moved away, forcing Amisha to release her. She wrapped her arms around her waist. Everything about her was broken and defeated.
"It does to me," Amisha said, her heart hurting for the child. "Please."
Tears began to flow down the young girl's cheeks. Amisha laid an arm around her shoulder, encouraging her. Slowly, between broken grasps, Nima said,
"Before we pray, we light a fire, an Agni."
The edge of her sari floated over her shoulders,
revealing the burns on her neck and upper shoulder. Amisha blinked back her tears and listened carefully.
The Agni is the deity that represents all other deities. It is the messenger of the gods. As the fire burns, it becomes our link with the supreme gods.
It was the reason diyas were lit before every prayer session, and why the temples had dozens of diyas burning at any given time. It was also why bodies were cremated after death. The fire served as the gate for the soul to enter heaven.
The fire was supposed to be my bridge, my escape from this world,
Nima cried, tears rushing down her face. All the breath left Amisha's body. She struggled against her own tears as she brought the sobbing girl into her arms.
You set yourself on fire?
Amisha whispered.
It was the only choice I could make.
Nima tore at the buttons on her sleeves, revealing both her forearms. Each one was burned far worse than her face. The skin had turned deep black, and the wrinkles reached beyond her elbow to her upper arm. Similar scarring covered her belly.
Now, I am less than I was before.
Nima swiped at her tears.
He no longer wants me.
She covered her face with her hands as she continued to sob.
My fiancé no longer believes me worthy.
Amisha held her as the sobs shook her young body. Minutes seemed like hours as the girl cried her heartbreak into Amisha's arms. All Amisha could do was hold her, their silence filling the emptiness. Drained of her tears, Nima stepped back and struggled to rebutton her blouse.
Nima.
Amisha ached for the young girl whose life was forever changed.
Betty. When my body caught on fire, the pain was excruciating,
Nima said, her voice filled with self-loathing.
My soul fought death. My brain demanded I scream for help. That's how they found me, because I begged to be saved.
She wrenched open the door and stared into the empty hallway.
Now, every day, my heart wonders why.
Amisha was quiet as she and Stephen walked in the empty garden. She was oblivious to the sun that beat down on them. Stephen had been standing in front of his office door when Nima exited the classroom. He had waited, silently, while Amisha saw the young girl into the rickshaw.
Can we talk?
Amisha had asked softly once Nima had left. He immediately agreed and followed her outside.
What happened?
Stephen asked, now that they were alone.
She set herself on fire.
Her voice cracked, and the tears that she had been unable to cry in front of Nima now spilled down her cheeks.
She wanted to die.
My God.
Sadness tinged his words, along with resignation.
She cried out for help.
Amisha picked up a small rock and threw it against the trunk of a tree.
So, she's alive, but broken.
Angry, she took another rock and did the same thing.
She wanted to escape her fate. Death seemed to be the only way to make that happen.
She folded her arms over her midsection.
The assignment? I told them to make a choice.
Amisha, you didn't do this.
Stephen reached out, but closed his hand into a fist before letting it fall without having touched her. His tie hung loosely around his neck.
This was not your doing.
Someone is responsible, Amisha argued. Who takes the blame for what happened to her?
When Stephen remained quiet, she added,
I could have done something to stop her.
Her guilt and sadness weighed heavy.
I should have done something.
How?
He laid a hand on her shoulder and squeezed. Amisha tensed and then relaxed into his touch. There was nothing you or anyone could have done to save that girl. Frustrated, he admitted. If you had stepped in, there would have been repercussions. Amisha knew she was fortunate to be at the school. With the privilege came the knowledge that she had to tread carefully. Never could she cross a line with the students that would require Stephen's intervention. Yet, right now, it all felt like excuses, and she was ashamed for not having stepped up.
Her story was a cry for help, Amisha admitted, and I didn't heed the call.
Nima's parents wouldn't have let you in, Stephen reminded her. What Nima did wasn't unheard of. In their world, each person, in her own way, had to find her path and a way to navigate it. If it was an unpaved path, then the person chanced walking alone, abandoned by those who believed they knew better.
I could have told her there was another way.
Is there? Stephen picked up the rock Amisha had thrown. When I was a child, I spent hours fighting with a sword and shield. My father asked me who I was battling. Preparing for the bad guys, I told him. He said, sometimes our fiercest battles are the ones we fight with ourselves.
What did he mean?
Pensive, Stephen thought before answering. Everyone fights their wars. If my time here has taught me anything, it's that you don't always know who your enemy is. But if you're lucky, no matter who the adversary, you'll stand tall while fighting. Stephen handed the rock to her. Nima was desperate. I think she fought the only way she knew how.
30. Please tell me why. Ravi had never requested time off before. Now he was asking for a full week. Are you ill? Before he could answer, Amisha leaned over the laundry they were folding and touched his forehead with a finger.
You don't have a fever, she informed him. Maybe it is a good thing you are not allowed to attend university.
He swatted her hand away. He handed a stack of towels to Bina to place in the cupboard.
If you had chosen to heal the sick, I fear they would not have survived one day in your care.
You protest every time I touch you,
so I dare not check your fever with my palm, Amisha returned. If the neighbors saw you laying your hand on an untouchable, I think I would meet with an unforeseen death as I slept, Ravi commented. And if they knew you fed them meals and sweets from food cooked by an untouchable, you would meet the same fate.
Having rejoined them after putting away the towels, Bina said,
Because of you, Ravi, Srimati is believed to be the best cook in the village. When I am on my deathbed, I will reveal my secret to our friends, Amisha promised. You'd better hope you've lost your hearing before your life. Their screams of fury will be loud, Ravi returned.
Your attempt at changing the conversation has been noted, and may I say well done,
Amisha grinned at him.
Now, answer my question. Why the time off?
I need the rest, Ravi hedged. This work has tired me out.
Lying is not your best skill, Amisha decided, never having heard him tell an untruth before. They say practice makes perfect. Keep trying, and I will tell you how you are doing.
A week, Ravi sighed in frustration. How can that be so difficult to accommodate? This circle we keep going around in is making me dizzy.
She brought out a stack of red peppers and scattered them on a plate to dry. Once dried, they would be crushed into flakes.
Please tell me so we can get off this track.
He's getting married, Bina answered. Ow! She cried when Ravi swatted her with a hand towel.
Married,
Amisha's eyes widened with joy.
Really? My parents have insisted, Ravi said hesitantly. Because of you, we have been blessed with income. They want grandchildren.
He spent every waking moment in their home, doing any job that was necessary. For his dedication, Amisha paid him triple the amount he was due. With the money, Ravi had bought a home for himself, his parents, and his siblings. They had never had one before. Though it was small, he told Amisha it was their castle.
This is wonderful news. Why didn't you tell me?
Amisha's mind whirred with gift ideas. A party in their honor and food for the Brahmins. They would need new furniture for their home. It was just a matter of maneuvering around him.
She must be beautiful, she nudged Bina. Only the best for our handsome Ravi, right, Bina?
Amisha wanted to hug him, to show her joy at the thought of his marriage. Yet she couldn't. Not when the wrath of any passerby could change their lives forever. Even alone, she never embraced him. So she settled for a smile and clasping her hands in thanks at his good news.
I am lucky,
Ravi said, looking overjoyed.
It is she who is blessed. To have got you is the best prize for a woman.
I asked.
Ravi hesitated, suddenly reserved.
I asked for her to have your heart and generosity.
Amisha stopped what she was doing to stare at him, her heart constricted. Chada's words from long ago echoed in her ear. Find someone you can trust. Fate gave her the gift of someone who had become her close friend and confidant.
I am the privileged one, Amisha said, all traces of playfulness gone. Having you as my friend in this life assures me I did much good in my last one. Few are so blessed.
That afternoon, Amisha sat quietly while Sujata, Tara, and other women from the village discussed the recent happenings in the village. Amisha and Ravi had prepared kachori for the gathering. The round balls filled with yellow mung dal, black pepper, red chili pepper, and ginger paste had taken all night to finish. Ravi accompanied it with a large bowl of shevda, a combination of fried lentils, peanuts, spices, and chickpea flour noodles. They spent the afternoon discussing the best places to shop and the quality of the silk.
The city is the only place to shop, they agreed.
Tara took a sip of her coconut water.
Amisha, this food is excellent. You went out of your way.
Thank you.
Amisha didn't tell them that Ravi had helped.
It's my pleasure to have your company.
Just as she started to say something else, there was a knock on the door. She excused herself and opened it, to find Nima on her doorstep. Shocked, Amisha ushered her in. It had been weeks since she had come to the school.
How are you, Betty?
Nima kept her face hidden under the security of her sari. Spotting the other women, she said,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I can come another time.
We should be leaving.
Amisha's friends began to gather their things.
We need to start dinner for the children.
Nima moved to the side, away from their scrutiny, while they took their leave. Once the house was empty, she pulled out a cheaply made envelope from her bag. In perfect letters, Nima had written Amisha's name on the front. It was an engraved invitation to Nima's wedding that weekend.
I came to give you this.
You're getting married? Amisha asked, shocked. Nima wrung her hands together, the burned one intertwined with the smooth skin of the other.
I played with fire like a child, she whispered. Now I must accept the consequences like an adult.
She started to speak and then stopped,
swallowing twice before explaining, "They have found me a groom 3 villages over. It is a small ceremony in 2 days, but I hope you can come."
"What does he do?"
Amisha's palms began to sweat with fear. She knew the only type of man willing to take a disfigured bride would be one who could use her burns to evoke the sympathy of others. Though Amisha dreaded the answer, she waited.
"He begs,"
Nima said, confirming Amisha's fears.
"For a small dowry, he has agreed to marry me and provide for me whatever he can."
"Come work for me."
Amisha's mind raced with ideas. She refused to accept begging as Nima's only option.
"You can have a job here."
"I can't."
Nima blinked rapidly to keep her tears from spilling over.
"The first day of class, you told us the story of the man and the bird."
She stared at the floor.
"There was only one small hole from which to breathe. We had to decide what happened next."
"I remember."
Amisha's heart ached with sorrow. She knew Nima had the talent and potential to become an accomplished writer, and yet she would live her life as a beggar.
"I was sure the man needed to worry about his own life," Nima said.
Most of the children had written a similar ending.
"But now I understand he was at fault. He should have cradled the bird and offered him the fresh air."
"What about the man?" Amisha asked.
"His fate was decided the day he built the house. If the house hadn't collapsed with the earthquake, it would have fallen another time. But with his final action, he should have saved the innocent bird from the consequences of his own mistakes."
"Nima."
Amisha tried to understand the story's connection to her offer for Nima to work for her.
"Your offer is generous, but I cannot accept it,"
Nima whispered.
"My parents' status in the community would be diminished over time by my disfigurement if I work here and continue to live with them."
Nima swiped at her tears.
"I will be viewed as a bad omen. My brother is young, and his life is ahead of him. His future cannot suffer because of the choice I made."
She offered Amisha a small smile.
"It is a blessing that I will no longer be my parents' burden."
She opened the door.
"I hope you can come to the wedding."
Amisha rushed to school. When she arrived, Stephen was waiting for her at the entrance. Without a word, he motioned her into his office.
"Are you all right?" he asked.
"She's married," Amisha answered.
She had come directly from the small wedding that Nima's parents had held. It was limited to immediate family and the pujari who presided over the ceremony.
"I watched her walk 7 times around the fire and leave with him after."
Amisha wanted to throw something or hit someone. Instead, she paced the small space.
"No one shed a tear. They simply watched her walk away," she cried.
"There's nothing that you could do," Stephen said gently.
He ran his hand over the back of his neck.
"What about the British?"
Amisha faced him. It was the same argument they'd had before, but Amisha couldn't help herself. All she could see was Nima's pain and the fear for her future.
"What can you do?"
"Amisha."
"I know,"
she said, assuming his answer.
"It's not your place."
The small room started to close in around her, bereft of oxygen. She was angry and wanted to lash out.
"My class is waiting."
"Maybe you should take the day off. You're hurting."
Stephen stood between her and the door. Amisha saw his sympathy, but couldn't react to it.
"I'm not the one destined to spend the rest of my life on the streets."
Amisha moved past him and out the door. She felt him watching. In the classroom, all the students were already seated and waiting patiently.
My apologies for the delay.
Amisha began to read aloud her planned assignment, but Nima kept crowding out all other thoughts. She shut her notebook and faced the class.
Today, we are going to do something different, she said.
Stephen slipped into the classroom from the rear door and stood against the back wall, the students not noticing him. Amisha ignored him and continued with the idea that had just occurred to her.
We are a colony of England that is ruled by a king and queen. Each of you is learning in a British school, but we are Indian, and we have many customs and behaviors that are different from theirs.
Amisha stole a glance at Stephen, who watched her quietly.
Your friend and my former student, Nima, was married this morning.
She reined in her emotions, knowing she walked a fine line. An inappropriate display of emotions would force Stephen to censure her, but at the same time, these students were part of the future. They were the ones who could help bring about change. They could give an alternate ending to Nima's story, offer another option to anyone who wanted something different, something other than what was decided for them.
Was she happy?
A girl in the back asked. Amisha shut her eyes at the question. Few, if any, students knew about Nima's accident. Her brother had kept the secret from his classmates, and Nima had been primarily confined to her house afterward.
She accepted that marriage was her next step.
What is the assignment?
Bored, a male in the front began to scribble on his paper. Amisha thought about it.
We are going to write about how our country would change if a woman was our leader.
In the back, Stephen straightened, his eyes intent on her. She ignored him as another student raised her hand.
Yes, Gita?
If the queen was our leader?
No, not the queen, not the Raj. A woman born in India and raised with Indian social standards and belief systems. Each of you must imagine an Indian woman who defies those customs, who defies the norms, and leads our country.
Like Gandhi?
Gandhi is fighting for our independence, Amisha said. I am talking about the leader of an independent India. Tell me about this woman and how she would rule us.
How is that a story?
One of the older boys was confused.
Is it something you can imagine happening?
Amisha asked, her voice harsher than she meant it to be. Everyone stayed quiet.
That's why it's a story, because it's fiction.
Stephen left the room as quietly as he had entered. Amisha continued with the class, making sure the students understood the assignment before giving them time to write. Amisha read the students' stories after they left. She was proud that each one had tried his best to imagine a situation where a woman ruled India. Their stories, though sometimes comical, were sincere. She enclosed them in a large envelope and was sealing it when Stephen walked in.
An Indian leader.
He thrust his hands into his pockets.
I was surprised to see you in the classroom.
I would imagine. If I knew you were going to encourage an uprising, I would have reconsidered my teaching offer.
You fear a woman leader?
Amisha asked. She didn't realize she was holding her breath until his answer led her to exhale in relief.
No, Stephen watched her carefully. But I do have to worry about one of my teachers advocating an Indian leader to our students.
I wasn't.
Amisha paused, frustrated.
I wasn't taking a political stance. This is for Nima.
She held up the envelope, her anger vibrating off her. I wanted to send her something that would show her she shouldn't give up, that she can still hope.
And you thought the children's stories would do that? Stephen asked.
Though his voice held no judgment, Amisha felt silly and small nonetheless.
It was a ridiculous thought.
She threw the envelope onto the desk.
No, it wasn't.
He took the envelope and wrote Nima's name on the front of it.
I'll have a courier take this to her new home.
Thank you.
His consideration surprised Amisha. He bent so they were eye level.
Amisha, I'm sorry about what happened to her, no matter what I said earlier. Please know that.
It wasn't fair.
Amisha hung her head, her eyes filling with tears.
She deserved better.
But Nima's story wasn't so different from others in their time and place. As much as Amisha wanted to nurture her, encourage her, Nima could have done little with her future.
I know,
Stephen said, watching her quietly. 31. A few days after Nima's wedding, Amisha still couldn't get the young girl out of her mind. She hurt every time she thought of her. She and Stephen spent hours in the garden, talking about everything and nothing. It was as if he understood her need to lose herself in mundane topics, to forget about the girl she couldn't help.
Your brother? Amisha asked as they walked.
Ever since he had told Amisha about him, she yearned to ask more.
Did you spend a lot of time with each other?
Stephen didn't answer right away, and Amisha wondered if the topic was still too difficult. She started to tell him it was fine when he said,
We were friends, and that was saying a lot for us.
Stephen seemed to withdraw as he remembered home.
As children, we fought as all boys did. Forgiveness was offered with a tackle to the ground and punches to vulnerable body parts.
As adults, he explained, they had become close and found they had more in common than just the blood coursing through their veins.
For that, I am grateful.
You were not expecting to be?
Amisha asked.
My parents didn't talk about their emotions, Stephen said. I assumed my brother and I would follow suit.
You're glad you didn't,
Amisha said, sensing the affection he felt for the man he had lost.
Family is important.
She remembered what he had told her about his father.
Your father made sure you were sent to India instead of the war. He must love you very much.
A soldier in India.
Stephen didn't bother to hide his anger.
My father wished for me to be yet another guardian of the king's pilfered treasure.
Is that what you think?
Amisha asked. It was the first time Stephen had admitted that India didn't belong to his home country.
That we deserve our freedom.
If I say yes, then I betray my people. If I say no, do I betray you?
He asked, silencing her.
No,
Amisha told him finally.
India's freedom doesn't guarantee everyone is free.
Both seemed to understand she was talking about Nima.
Is that what you want?
He asked.
Your freedom?
What would I do with it?
Amisha tried to make light of her words.
I'm speaking without thinking.
Before he could say more or push her for a deeper answer, she changed the subject.
Do you regret your time here?
Not anymore.
Stephen held her gaze while he spoke.
But I miss my friends, and sometimes my family, he winked, back at home.
He paused.
You don't see your family very often, do you?
They had shared their histories in one of their many conversations.
No,
she answered. After a woman marries, there's little reason for her to have contact.
Amisha had learned to subvert the ache any time she thought of them. They had been her entire existence until she was handed off in marriage and forgotten.
Do they live far? Stephen asked.
By train it would not be far. But the distance doesn't matter. It's just not a priority.
With the children to take care of and Deepak out of town, it wasn't easy to make the trip. And though she yearned for the mother who bore her and then gave her away, she knew her mother had never really known her. Her dreams, her desires, became a secret kept well hidden.
This is the woman's choice? Stephen asked.
No, by tradition, Amisha said. She wondered at the surprised look on his face.
Is it not that way in your country?
No, he answered. Amisha remembered his telling her that both of his grandparents lived near his childhood home.
Why separate a woman from her family after marriage?
As a young girl, Amisha had watched her friends handed off to unknown families in marriage. Only years, if not months, older than Amisha, they would weep and beg not to be given away, plead to be allowed to remain with their family and siblings and continue living in the only world they knew.
So that the woman can begin to have children, preferably boys.
The dowry demand increased with age. A young daughter-in-law could begin producing sons immediately. Large, extended families crowded into small homes. Sons and their new families lived with their parents and unwed siblings.
They help support the father, Stephen said.
After living in India for this amount of time, he was familiar with the customs.
Provide for the family. The marriage and bearing sons is all that matters.
The threat of divorce or being banished always hung over a bride if she didn't fulfill her customary duties.
The wife's natural family serves no purpose. It's a waste of her time and productivity.
Amisha tried to hide her dismay at the practice, but when she saw the sympathy on Stephen's face, she knew he saw through her.
I'm sorry, Stephen said. He moved toward her before stopping.
That's the way it is.
Amisha valued her culture and its traditions that demanded unconditional love of children and family, and yet there were imperfections that she couldn't ignore.
There has to be a reason for it, right? She asked, but didn't wait for an answer. All traditions have to originate from somewhere. Maybe there was a need for the behavior at the time.
That's very philosophical, Stephen teased, but Amisha saw the admiration in his eyes.
It makes sense. Women are the only ones who can give birth, leaving men free to provide for the family.
What about when those roles are no longer necessary? Amisha asked.
Unable to ever have such a conversation with Deepak, she relished every moment of it.
What if tradition is just an excuse to keep things the way they have always been?
You're talking about Ravi and Bina, Stephen asked, seeming to read her mind.
She had spoken often about her frustration with the limits imposed on them.
The temple still won't allow them in,
among other things.
Amisha knew many of the untouchables feared for their lives. They didn't dare to anger villagers for fear of the repercussions.
Sometimes it feels like an excuse to be unkind. When everyone is doing it, maybe it feels acceptable.
There are few consequences if society accepts the behavior, Stephen agreed.
It would take a great person to stand against the norm.
Amisha once again thought of Gandhi
and his constant words of freedom. Your king and queen seem to have found all the excuses they need to control India. Maybe they are no different from the rest of us. And I am their loyal foot soldier, he said, shocking her, using my role to keep the Indians in their place, he seemed to ask himself. When she started to respond, he asked, What would you do differently, if you were me? She imagined him saying no to coming to India, and her heart broke at the thought. Nothing. It is easier to speak words, but one man, she said, pausing slightly, or woman, cannot change an entire people's thinking. She struggled to make clear her thoughts. I didn't mean for you not to be here. She took a deep breath and stole a glance at him, hoping he understood what she really meant to say. But his silence willed her to continue. I would keep things exactly as they are, so you could remain here. She fell silent after her admission, once again afraid she had said something out of line or crossed an unspoken boundary. Sacrifice India's freedom for tutoring lessons. Stephen tried to lighten the air between them. Your people may disown you. My people are fighting a battle no one should ever have to. The freedom to be themselves. Amisha knew that answer was too simple. Before Stephen could call her on it, she continued. But with all the anger and hatred, is it impossible to see the good that came with the bad? Then why fight? Stephen asked. He motioned toward the garden and the school. We are offering the best of what we have. Better roads, schools. India had none of this before. Amisha knew he wasn't arguing with her, but instead valuing her opinion. It made her heart sore. At what cost? She thought of the struggles she read about, the oppression and dejection felt by even the strongest Indians. We can't define ourselves as long as someone else gives us our definition. Is that what we're doing? Stephen asked. He went silent as he thought. Are we forcing Indians to become who we need you to be? Before Amisha could disagree or agree, he asked, Will freedom give you the right to be who you want to be? Will Ravi begin to be treated as an equal rather than an untouchable? No, Amisha answered honestly. As much as she wanted to believe that independence for India meant independence for everyone, she knew it might not be. But it's a start, right? Above them, a flock of birds flew in formation, filling the sky with their calls. When you are pushed down, it seems you have two choices, to lie down or stand up and ask why. Like you, Stephen asked. At her confusion, he explained. When you talked about attending school, you said it was because you wanted more. He tilted his head to the side and considered her. Do you always stand up for what you want? Amisha stared at him, amazed he had remembered her words from the conversation she had forgotten. I think it's foolish not to stand, though it's not always the wisest choice, especially if the consequence may hurt those you love. Nima stood up the best way she knew how, and the cost is one she would never have imagined. It is not this way everywhere, he said softly. You have choices. No? Amisha knew in the cities that there were more rights for women and untouchables, but in her small village, that world seemed far away. Where? England? England still has far to go, but a woman is considered equal to a man in daily life. He clasped his hands together and stretched them over his head. Not to say there are not men
who would prefer this way of life. A woman at the beck and call of a man can be a dream come true, he teased. Your dream? Amisha challenged.